From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
Welcome to Defrag. All right, so let's get started. Gov, welcome back.
You too.
Yeah, thank you. I was sick. You were sick. It was a long time off, but we're here.
I'm dragging my butt right now.
Yeah, same here. So, and the questions seem to be long, but hey, let's get started. All right. First question, there's some commercials and ads for applications say they'll make your internet faster. What's your opinion on these claims? What are they actually doing, and is there a way to do the same without those apps?
They're doing absolutely nothing to your machine.
Yeah.
At best, they're doing nothing. At worst, they're installing some sort of spyware, malware crap on your system.
So
zero benefit to ever looking at those commercials. Really, most commercials, have they ever been of
any
real benefit?
Tell me how you really feel.
Well, how I really feel, I think they should be, like, nuked out of existence.
Yeah.
But that's, you know, that's my personal opinion.
Nothing to do about that.
Can't do anything about that.
Yeah.
You know, most things that you see on TV, take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
You know, it's the, all you really have to do is put in, you know, the web address for whatever one that you're looking at, to, and, you know, in your favorite search engine, web address, and then scam.
Yeah.
And you're going to see that most of these, if not all of them, are all scams.
Yeah.
You know, they're not beneficial to your system at all. They're looking at a way of making a quick buck.
So I remember back in the day there was like a little registry tweak you could do. Change one number a little bit higher.
Yeah, your TCP frame number.
Yeah.
You know, you can change it so that you're not defragmenting packets through your router.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in the old days of modems.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes you could actually get a better rate.
Yeah.
But now with broadband, Windows...
Yeah, everyone's got, you know, cable modems, so
yeah.
It's not...
It's all based off Ethernet. You don't need to change your timing window at all.
Yeah.
You know, you just leave it as is. We have auto-tuning frame sizes in Windows, so we actually determine what is the actual right frame length for a TCP/IP. Packet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we use the right ones.
Yeah. So is there anything you do when you set up a new machine, though, other than just standard stuff? Any
for
tweaks like that?
Tweaking of performance?
Yeah.
Or tweaking of the internet?
For performance.
Really not a lot, you know.
It's pretty good vanilla. It's not...
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I do for a Win 7 system is actually turn off transparency, only because that has nothing to do with the internet.
Yeah.
You know, that's just because I don't particularly like transparency.
Yeah.
I don't need the overhead of seeing a murky image behind a, you know, my window.
Yeah.
Doesn't make a lot of sense to me personally. So I turn that off. And, you know, sometimes that is actually a measurable performance boost, because if you don't have to do transparency,
yeah,
that is actual, you know, a measurable boost.
Yeah, I do a few things. Like, you know, I'll turn on show hidden files, stuff like that, but nothing major.
Yeah, again, that's not a perf boost per se.
Yeah.
Because I turn on hidden files,
exactly.
Too.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, because it's something that I want to know where things are being stuffed on the drive.
Yeah, of course.
So.
Cool, okay. All right, next question from Brian Keller, our friend from This Week on Channel 9. He says, if I create a storage space with Windows 8 using two non-system hard disks, can I dual boot into another partition and still access the same storage space? I'm guessing it would have to be either Windows 8, Windows Server 2012 to do so, but I'm wondering if both partitions will recognize the storage space correctly.
Absolutely.
Cool.
Yep, no problems. You can multi-boot storage spaces. You can move the storage spaces to another machine, and it'll recognize them as well.
Yeah.
So it's really not a problem.
Cool. Another one from Brian Keller. He says, I just rebuilt my home PC and threw an old hard drive from another PC into this one as a non-system drive, F. On the F drive, I knew there was some data I wanted to save, so I didn't want to format it, but I did want to blow away the Windows directory that used to be on there, along with program files, program data, etc. However, when I try to delete certain parts of those folders, I get the following message, screenshot below, complaining about Trusted Installer not letting me delete those files. If I delete from a command prompt, I get access denied. I am, of course, an administrator on my new PC, and I've disabled UAC completely. I'm not domain joined, so no funny business with group policy. And I can click try again a bajillion times, and it doesn't delete. My only recourse seems to be to cherry-pick the data I want off that drive to another drive and then format it. Why is this happening? What is Trusted Installer? And why does it have locks on files which are no longer in use?
So... a system drive, whether it's been pulled from another machine or you're booting into another partition, is still, you know, a Windows system.
Yeah.
Whether it's online or offline. You know, that's basically what I'm getting at. So I just wanted to illustrate that program files on your file system is actually owned by a user called Trusted Installer. Mm-hmm. Trusted Installer is a very special account. We use that in order to maintain the reliability of the system. We don't want things that are running as system or administrator even that can corrupt the system so that it won't boot or that it can't be serviced or that, you know, is critical for functionality, which is why in Vista, we cranked up the reliability of the system by making Trusted Installer the owner for things that is truly owned by the system.
Yeah.
Only very elevated things can change permissions and add files, remove files, that kind of stuff. So when you pull out a driver, you boot into another partition, it's still protected by this particular account. Your user account, even though it's an administrator, still cannot access those files, or they cannot, you know, blow away the whole directory. You can usually create files in certain locations. But you can't just arbitrarily blow it away.
Yeah.
So in this particular case, what I would recommend to do is actually take your files, the things that you need, back those up, and then format the drive, and then lay them back down again.
Yeah.
That's the fastest way of doing it. What you can do is go through and, you know, say, for example, this folder was owned by Trusted Installer. It currently isn't, but you can edit this, or you can go to Advanced, go to Owner, edit, change the owner to yourself, give yourself permissions because you are an administrator, you are allowed to take ownership of something. You can take ownership of the directory and then go back. You have to save that particular change, go back into this view, go edit, add yourself. You could, you know, add your particular user and give yourself full control over that directory. Mm-hmm. At that point, then you can actually delete the whole directory. It'll propagate down to all the files, but it takes significantly longer to actually propagate those permissions down all the way. You know, if you have a large hard drive, you're trying to take over permissions for a lot of files, it can actually be a long time. So I usually don't recommend that. It's far simpler just to copy the files off, the ones that you need,
mm-hmm.
sanitize them along the way, you know, get rid of stuff that you don't truly, truly need, and then format the drive that you care about, and then put those files back.
Awesome. Okay. All right. Next question. Windows 7, how do you change an existing standard user account to administrator account without removing and re-adding the account? Well, that's a pretty simple one.
Yeah.
We're here for everyone, so.
I like to do it from the command line.
Yeah.
So from an existing administrator account, net local group administrators, dot backslash whatever the user is, add, and then you're good.
Okay, awesome. And you could also do it under users in the control panel.
Under users in the control panel, of course. You can go here, user accounts, change account type. You can change their group membership, make them a standard user or an administrator from here.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Next question. When setting up my new computer, I accidentally gave my account the wrong name. I was able to amend the name of the user account in the control panel, but the folder the user's files are stored under is still named incorrectly. I know this really doesn't matter, but it's going to drive me crazy nonetheless. How do I rename the user account folder, the folder inside users, in Windows 7 without breaking everything?
Short answer is you don't.
Yeah.
If you truly are bothered by that, and I can't for the life of me understand why anyone would be, but if you
over time that little nit could just kill a person over a long period of time.
Perhaps it's usually not one of those things that I tend to care about.
Yeah.
You'd have to just create a new user with the folder that you think it will be.
Yeah.
And then delete your old user profile. And
yeah.
And just use that new user.
Okay. Next question. I am the victim of a harrowing problem attempting to run certain programs on my Windows 7 64-bit machine. The primary program that exhibits the problem is Adobe Acrobat. Frequently, when I double-click a PDF file or open it any other way, the hourglass appears for a few seconds, but the file's window does not appear in the screen. The window is not in the background. Task Manager does not list it as an open application. Alt-Tab doesn't show the window. However, the Processes tab does list Adobe Acrobat process as running. If I attempt multiple times, multiple Adobe Acrobat processes appear on the process list, but no window appears. Even right-clicking on the Adobe Acrobat process and selecting Bring Window to Front does not work because this option is disabled. Eventually, after sometimes 10 or more attempts and force quitting and running the Acrobat process between attempts, though this may not be related, the window appears as expected. Acrobat is not the only problem that exhibits this problem. Another less well-known program also frequently exhibits the issue Take Command. I have not experienced a problem with any other programs. The issue exhibited more than 50% of the occasions I wish to run either of these two programs.
Wow, that's a long problem description.
Yeah.
So this, you know, I use Acrobat. I have not seen this particular problem. He doesn't actually say what version that that he's using. But, you know, let's troubleshoot this particular problem. What are the things that a user that might be seeing this, how can they diagnose it?
Yeah.
So first of all, you know, reboot the system. Let's start from a fresh, fresh run of the OS.
Mm-hmm.
Double click it once, right? What happens? Does it show up? Does it not show up? Let's assume that it doesn't show up even after a fresh reboot. Leave it for, you know, what's a reasonable amount of time? Say 5 minutes. Come back to it. Is it there? If it's not there, don't do anything. Go check the event log. See if there's any kind of issues reported from the moment that you've double-clicked the XE, so, you know, take note of the time, and see have there been any new events in either the application or the system log to denote any kind of errors, even some things that are information, mm-hmm. it might be useful to take note of. There could be something in there. If there's not anything in the event log and you're still seeing that the process is there in Task Manager, but there's still nothing showing up, what you really have to do at that point is attach a debugger to it.
Yeah.
Because you don't know what is actually happening. All you're seeing is that the process is there. It's sitting, waiting, perhaps waiting on something. I know Adobe Acrobat uses a lot of plugins.
Yeah.
You might have a ton of plugins installed, and it's enumerating through them, trying to load them all. Honestly, I can't tell. You know, when you don't have a process that's running correctly, it hasn't crashed because you see that it's still there. It's waiting on something. Is a primary use case, or it's spinning. You know, it's deadlocked for some reason. Really can't tell. If there's nothing in the event log, you kind of have to use the debugger in order to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
At that point, what you can do is in Task Manager, if you know people are actually seeing this kind of problem, I'd be interested to look at them. If you're in Task Manager, what you can do is, pick a process, say create a dump file.
Mm-hmm.
That'll take a dump of the file, send the dump to me. I'll take a look.
Yeah, this is one that I had seen this in the past a couple times. It wasn't like every, other time that I ran the application.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a rare problem, at least for me. But I had seen it before. I think what I'd try, just if you don't want to go through a lot of different things, uninstall, reinstall the latest version. So it couldn't hurt, and that might fix your problem. And also, there are other applications that you can use too. So
sure, I'd check to see if there's any patches for it. You know, it might help. Obviously, go to the application support forum.
Yeah.
See if there's anything there. A lot of the times, the more complex applications might have some advanced diagnostics that you can run. Like if you say, run it from the command line with some parameters, it might actually be able to tell you some additional logging.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them have it, some do.
Yeah.
You might want to explore that for the different types of apps that you're having issues with.
Cool. Okay, next question. I want to set up a system with 9 monitors arranged in a 3x3 grid, trying to recreate the Matrix, no doubt. Is this configuration possible with Windows 7? Does it max out at a set number of monitors? Any suggestions about known working hardware combinations would be much appreciated. Currently considering 3 NVIDIA Quadro NVS420 cards to drive the array.
Absolutely no problem if you can find the cards to do it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
You might see, I don't know anything specific about that particular card, but if it's one of the cards that have, DisplayPort, DVI, VGA, then even though it has 3 connectors, you might not actually be able to drive 3 monitors
from
it. You can only drive 2 of them, say off the DisplayPort and DVI or DisplayPort and VGA. You may only be able to drive two things.
Yeah, and some of the modern cards, you can drive more than two monitors off of it, but one of the monitors has to be DisplayPort.
Right.
Which, it's, in my experience, it's been a little difficult to find a monitor that has DisplayPort in. And also,
and it has
to
be native DisplayPort. You can't just convert DVI or HDMI to DisplayPort.
Yeah, you can't use your DisplayPort to HDMI cable. All right, next question. It's been 4 days now. Every time I try to shut down my computer, Windows tries to install updates. No problem. The screen remains for more than 8 hours. That sounds like a problem. this started to happen after I installed Visual Web Developer 2010 Express. Why is this happening? Any ideas? For some reason, I think this is not good for my computer hard drive. I'm thinking about formatting my computer to fix it.
Well,
not the easiest problem to troubleshoot over an email, but...
not impossible.
Yeah.
Certainly not going to solve the problem right now, but
yeah.
Things to look at are your Windows update.log. This log will tell you what Windows Update is trying to do at that particular time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a pretty substantial log. Just go right to the bottom and you can see, you know, what's happening with it.
Yeah.
8 hours is an excessive amount of time, you know. Tell you that right now. That's not normal.
You know, usually it says don't shut down your computer while this is going on, so that can be a little bit scary if you're waiting 8 hours.
Yeah, we're not entirely sure, though, which screen it's on right now.
Yeah,
like,
true.
It could just be on the installing updates and then spinning.
Yeah.
It may not have gotten far enough to actually be installing the updates. So, yeah, the first thing you're going to want to look at is that log, event logs, of course, see if there's anything happening. Yeah, that's basically what you should be looking at. With a little bit more information, we can go into more additional troubleshooting.
Yeah.
But I don't really want to get into some of the repair operations without knowing what is going on first, because certain repair operations you shouldn't do unless you absolutely have to. Of course, a clean install. Well, clean install solves all, usually.
Yes.
Unless, of course, you do the exact same thing and you end up in this boat.
Yeah.
So probably, you know, one thing that I'm going to want to try is actually install this, what was it, Visual Studio Express?
Yeah, Visual Studio Express 2010.
Yeah, I mean, probably want to take a look at that and install it and see if I
Visual Web Developer 2010 Express.
Even if it's possible to reproduce.
Yeah, okay. All right, next question. Consider this scenario. I'm using Windows 7. Initially, I had the login password as first, quote, first. After some time, I change it to second. If I try to set the password as first again, Windows is not accepting. It says the password isn't meeting the requirements. So can't we set the previous Windows password again? And if possible, what's the way? Well, this isn't a Windows thing so much.
Well, not exactly.
Yeah, it's probably the group policy for your administrator. So talk to your administrator.
Talk to your admin. It's usually, you know, a good idea not to go back to your...
Yeah.
Older passwords anyways, you know,
yeah,
just keep changing it.
Or your birthday or whatever.
Oh, yeah. No, I like, you know, obscure lines from novels. You
yes.
know, forget about passwords, do passphrases, and then, you know, switch up characters within the passphrase.
I got a little convention that I like that I'm not going to talk about, but I do have a nice convention. One of the things at Microsoft, you can never use the password again.
Right.
So it's a challenge every time you have to change it to come up with something that you can remember long enough. And but, you know, it's security. You need to probably do that. So, yeah. But talk to your admin if that's a problem for you. All right, pick of the week time. Pick of the week. So a couple of them. So this week was pretty big for us. We had Windows 8 went RTM.
Yep.
Windows Server 2012, same. IE10 also RTM'd. So you can go to the Building Windows 8 blog. You can read all about this. Gov, tell us, what exactly does RTM mean?
I mean, everybody's probably heard it. RTM is release to manufacturing.
Yeah.
You know, we have a couple of other terms like RTW, which is release to web.
Yeah.
But this is the, you know, when we press the DVDs.
Yeah.
This is going to be the version.
Start burning the DVDs, baby. It's ready to go.
Right. Like, this is the version that we've basically blessed as saying, you know, we're going to service it. It's the one that's supported. There are no show-stopping bugs that we know of. And it's not bug-free. You know, no one's ever going to tell you that it's bug-free because it's not. But it is at a very, very high quality. It's the version that OEMs are getting so that they can prep their images for the October release. You know, machines will be ready, I believe, at the end of October. You know, this is the one that's going to be released to MSDN subscribers so that they can start installing it. So it just means it's a very, you know, it's a high quality. It's been vetted.
Ready to be installed.
It's ready to be installed. You know, we're obviously, just because we've named it RTM, you know, this is the version that we're shipping, doesn't mean that we're, you know, we stop working. You know, it will get, you know, as issues come up, you know, we're going to be looking at them. We're going to say, is it service worthy? Is it, you know, for the next release of the OS? But, you know, we're constantly servicing it. It doesn't mean that we detract from Windows 7 at all. You know, Windows 7 is still an awesome operating system. We're still servicing that one. It's still at the forefront of our minds. So
did the developers in the Windows group, they just kind of, it's all over now. I can take a vacation? Or well, is it
they did
still
it for
business
about,
as usual?
Yeah, they did it for about 5 minutes and said, okay, what's the next problem that we're going to solve?
So one of the things I did back in 2007, and it was 2000, I think July 2007, is I took a camera in when they RTM'd Windows Home Server and showed, they had kind of a party, Charlie Kendall, you know, two people turn the keys at the same time, metaphorically. They really just, you know, hit a button on the keyboard. There's a lot of different things that you fill out and stuff ahead of time. But, yeah, it's kind of, it's a fun time as a company. You get to say, you know, hey, we hit this milestone, which is a huge milestone for something as big as Windows.
Yeah, I mean, when you consider, you know, Steven Sinofsky mentions that there are literally thousands of features. And these are, like, real features. These aren't, like, bug fixes from Windows 7. You know, we don't consider those features. These are true, honest-to-goodness, like, major, major things that people have been asking for. And it's not hyperbole. Like, there are thousands and thousands and thousands of features that collectively thousands of engineers have been working on over the past 3 years. You know, and the amount of code churn, the amount of actual difference between Win 7 and Win 8 is actually relatively high. And we're still shipping a really high-quality product. You know, I'm happy to say that I've been part of shipping Windows 8.
I think it's the best operating system from Microsoft yet. It's I installed RTM yesterday on my laptop. Thrilled. I mean, there's just... And, you know, as a power user geek, you go through and you just find all kinds of stuff in there that you're like, wow, it's very cool. So, yeah, that's awesome.
And not just, you know, Windows, like, just across the company, we've been, you know, firing on multiple, on all cylinders, really. And there's so many really cool releases that are coming up.
Yeah, so the other one that I wanted to talk about for the pick of the week, too, was Outlook.com.
Outlook.com.
So Outlook has changed. Gove's not going to log in and let you see all his crazy email that's in there. But Outlook.com, get your email address now. You can go in and sign up. There's still time to get one that's relatively not, as Dan Fernandez would say, Justin Bieber fan 45. You can still sign up. Tremendous out-of-the-gate response. They had a million people sign up in 6 hours.
Yeah, this is, I mean, Outlook.com is the re-imaging of Hotmail, right? Huge number of features. I know, like, for myself, I've kept my Hotmail account over the past, you know, 13 years. I'm not changing it. But what you can do is, for folks that really do like their Hotmail.com account, you can create aliases with the Outlook.com.
There's a couple of things with Outlook where I was like, wow, that's a really good idea. I mean, usually you expect something like this comes out Webmail. Okay, it's Webmail. But then you go and it's like, you can make aliases. So if you don't, if you want to sign up at, you know, some service and you know they're going to spam you, you can just spin up a new alias and say, hey, I'm going to use blah blah blah,
and then create a folder for that alias, and all that junk can go in there.
Absolutely. You can even make a rule for that folder, just delete this, I know it's going to be garbage. So that's really nice. The other thing that you can do too is have it grab your email from other domains, and even leave it on different machines, so you know it's kind of like an IMAP service over POP. So it's a very nice, interesting new look at Webmail. Very cool. All right, so that's the show for this week. If you want to write us, you can write us at defragshow@microsoft.com. You can leave a comment in the show notes, and we'll get back to you. But we prefer, if you have a problem, to email. So Gove, in the middle of the night, while he's sick, can go back and forth to help you fix those problems.
Remember, log files are helpful.
Logs. All right, thanks for watching. Thank you.